Brewing Network is proud to present Beer Radio that turns ordinary homebrew into award-winning beer. The Jameel Show. And now, your hosts, Jameel Zainashef and John Plisse.
Checked.
Good evening, my Bruin brothers and sisters.
Good evening.
Good evening to you.
Good evening, Mr. Plisse.
You too, Mr. Zainashef.
Yeah, we're live after the Sunday show.
I think this is our first show where we've actually drank beer.
That's right. I mean, we tasted one on one of the shows.
Yeah.
But normally, you know, it's like 8 in the freaking morning, and yeah. We got work, and...
Yeah.
Yeah, no beer drinking.
But we got like two or three beers in our belly, and we're set.
Oh, yeah. We're cruising off of a day of heavy drinking like usual.
Yeah, it's a good day. I like it.
And, you know, because of this, and because, you know, our whole time frame's been just totally...
I feel so insecure.
Yeah. I have no comment on, anything? Like, emails that people sent. Or
you're relaxed.
Notes about any witty discussion that we might have.
Yeah.
We're left with this fine and witty banner.
There we go. witty banner.
Witty banter.
it's hot. It's hot in here.
It's hot in here. That's like, oh, you look into my eyes and it's hot.
It's hot.
Today we're talking about American Amber Ale or Red Ale.
And it's a hoppy red.
Well, yeah, you know, the interesting thing is here on the West Coast of the U.S., it is one hoppy, big, bold ale. Elsewhere in the world... Especially around through the United States, it's not quite as big, not quite as hoppy. It's much more restrained.
So it's more malt focused,
malt hop focused. You know.
Okay.
So do we want to dive right into it?
Let's dive into it.
All right. Why don't you describe for us what the BJCP says about the amber ales and your impressions?
And our impressions and what I've tasted too from other homebrewers. An American amber ale is a larger version of a pale ale, red in color. More hop focused, late hop additions, maybe some dry hops, you know, for aroma, you know. But you should have a fair amount of maltiness from the crystal malt used. And it's a balance between your crystal malts and your hop, hop bitterness or hop flavor additions. It's definitely focused on the malt character, the balance of crystal malts with other malts in the beer. It's full bodied. And it's basically a balance between crystal malts and, you know, your American Two Rows or your English Pales or whatever. A lot of American hops like Centennial, Cascades, maybe Amarillo these days are used. But it's definitely a maltier version of a pale ale in red in color for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and one of the key critical things is that it has some American hop character to it.
Right.
You know, it's really, you know, considered part of the style. You could use other kinds of hops that are not super citrusy or, you know, but, you know, generally kind of people expect some sort of American hops, a Cascade, Centennial, Columbus, Amarillo. I think Amarillo is a really good choice as well. And the other thing is that it has some sort of crystal malt. Mm-hmm. There's an interesting kind of overlap between American Pale Ale, where it starts to get too crystally, where people are putting in, you know, too much crystal.
That's a common problem,
then,
too.
And then American Ambers, where they're putting in just a light touch of crystal. And the two kind of overlap, and the style guide will say that. And also in, you know, starting gravity and the strength of the beer. Some places will brew a lower gravity red that's, you know, lower than their pale ale. So it's not necessarily bigger, but I think here on the West Coast, we definitely think of it as being bigger.
Right.
Absolutely. It's a big, bold, bad beer.
Yeah. And is that because it's got more residual sugar? Because so they think of it bigger as in it's sweeter or maltier in flavor? I mean...
Well, yeah, I think that's a good question. I think, you know, American Amber is, you know, truly, it's one of the true American styles of beer.
Mm-hmm.
It actually grew out of, the theory is it grew out of of American Pale Ale. Justin's having a good old time over there.
Yeah.
It grew out of American Pale Ale. Mm-hmm. And, you know, American pale ale grew out of, you know, the English pale ales, and then they kind of Americanized them with American hops and right. American ingredients and kind of changed the style and brought it up in bitterness and
went hop crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, the American amber is kind of a unique offshoot of that. People just started putting more crystal in there, and then somebody kind of decided to make it, you know, an intense crystal and some red in there and mm-hmm. and kind of grew from there. And so it's a unique American style. It's one of the few. Mm-hmm. And I totally lost my train of thought.
Well, it's just it's tricky to do, I think, an American amber balanced, because I think a lot of homebrewers have the issue of using too much crystal.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just, you might as well eat crystal malt raw, because it tastes like they've done 10-15% of crystal malt just to get their color out of their.
Yeah,
you know.
That's well, and that's an interesting thing. I think you know, you can use a fair amount of crystal, but it's a balancing act between the amount of crystal you have and the residual sugars in the from the base malt.
Mm-hmm.
If you have too much residual. We talked about this on the Imperial IPA show,
right?
Where if you have too much base malt sugar, it can become really kind of cloying.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the same thing kind of goes with the amber ales. If you don't dry the beer out enough, a high dosage of crystal malt will be, you know, overly sweet.
Right.
If you have crystal malt and not a lot of residual sugar from the base malt, the crystal malt's okay. It can kind of get a more raisiny kind of, especially the darker crystal malts, a more raisiny character, and it can be, you know, pleasing, because mm-hmm. it doesn't seem too sweet. It
right.
seems a little more roasty than sweet.
Right.
If you have a lot of backing sugar, you mm-hmm. know, you didn't ferment it completely, you used a different kind of yeast, it mm-hmm. didn't attenuate enough, there's so much sweetness there, it seems real caramelly and
yeah.
syrupy.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, that's the kind of problem you're talking yeah, about, where they've added a lot of crystal, and, you know, the crystal adds a lot of residual sugar.
Right.
You know, not very fermentable. And then, you know, they get a lot of base malt sugar.
Now, if you have a fermentation issue, let's say you don't have temperature control and you don't do a balanced fermentation all the way through, do you think that some of those wort off flavors or the overuse of crystal malts could be kind of tweaked or not fully attenuated out because you didn't
yeah.
have a good fermentation all the way
yeah,
through?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point.
You know?
I think, and this is probably what you're referring to, is if your fermentation temperature is all over the place, what will happen is you'll get your yeast going, things start to warm up, you don't have good control of your fermentation temperature, and then, you know, as the yeast start to, slow down, you know, they can't build enough heat to keep the beer warm enough for the environment.
Right.
And all of a sudden the temperature all of a sudden drops off a little cliff.
Right.
And the yeast stop.
Right.
And they stop, you know, short of fully attenuating that beer.
Right. And that can be right. too sweet of a beer.
Right. Right. Can be too sweet, leave it exposed to further bacterial action.
Mm-hmm.
If the beer, you know, should have, you know, any contamination in it, things like that.
And you said bacterial, you know,
or wild yeast.
Wild yeast.
Yeah.
But let's say, like, you had a fermentation issue and it stopped like 10-20, let's say.
Right.
And you had this bunch of residual sugar. If you had a wild yeast or a wild bacteria, will they absorb that crystal malt, that residual sugar from those crystal malts?
You know, I believe so. And especially the bacteria, you know. Most brewing yeast cannot ferment, you know, the longer chain sugars and the things for, you know, and also, you know, some of the flavors of the crystal malt, the things like that, you know, dextrins, starches, the yeast won't ferment, but bacteria will break those down
right.
and, you know, continue on. So that can also be an issue.
Hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well.
Well, and we got
Doc
joining
Scott,
us, too.
I mean,
yeah,
he's looking good.
He had a couple of pints of Doppelbock, I think.
Yeah, I did.
And now he's joined us. We're talking about American amber ales or red ales and kind of the difference between here on the West Coast, how they're much bigger and bolder. Look at, you know, Bear Republic's Red Rocket.
Yeah.
Now, that's totally outside the style guidelines, if you look at the style guidelines. But out here, we consider that a good American red ale.
For sure.
You know, that's a quality red ale right there.
I've tried to clone that one a couple of times. I've had some requests for that one.
I have two, and I've got an excellent clone recipe.
Excellent. Oh, thank you.
That one's a tough one. I don't know.
Well, I've talked to the guys at Bear Republic, and it's kind of a family-owned thing.
Right.
And I mostly talked to the dad who was giving us the tour and
Rich,
stuff. And yeah, and he won't divulge any family secrets.
I don't blame him.
He's like, but they make it sound really complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he uses a lot of malt and a lot of different hops.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd love to see your clone recipe.
They have such a unique brewing style and a hop flavor in their beers that I've never had any home brewer bring me a beer that tasted anywhere near Beer
mm-hmm.
Republic's.
Mm-hmm.
Or a professional brewery, for that matter. It's just so unique.
Well, this will get you pretty close, I think.
Ooh. Step it
pretty
up.
Pretty close. You might have to change the hops around a little bit, but it'll get you pretty close.
Good. Well,
and how do we acquire this? We you don't know, ask, don't tell?
No, actually, you know, some time ago, my Keystone Light drinking neighbor from down the street, I gave him Arrogant Bastard as like his first craft brew. And, you know, he really loved it. So at this one point, we wanted to, you know, craft this Arrogant Bastard version. But then, you know, we also wanted to kind of get, like, you know, some amber ales and not quite as big as Arrogant Bastard. You know, so it'd be more of a session beer. And we ended up with this, coming up with this recipe that was, you know, more along the lines of this big red beer. And brewed it a couple of times. Tried it. And, yeah, I tell you, you know, quite similar. There's a lot of similarities there. And so when somebody was asking me recently about a Red Rocket clone, I was like, you know, wow, if I just do this one little thing to it, you know, it's right there. So turned out pretty good.
Do you have it? Are you gonna share now or later? Or
well, I thought
soon.
We'd
soon or
I thought we'd
take a little
you
break
know, take
here?
A short break,
okay.
And
well,
when we come back from the break, we will kind of get into the recipe for you know, Red Rocket Cologne.
Hey, Jay-Z, just before you go to the break, I had a question come through. I think you're going to get a lot more questions today. I'm going to try to keep them on topic for you. But this might be a good one before you go to break. It's just that someone wants to know the difference, if you could contrast the difference between an amber lager and an amber ale.
That's a good question.
Is amber lager like a Vienna lager?
Yeah, Vienna lager, okay. Oktoberfest. At least that's how the BJCP categorizes them. And those are going to be much more malt focused. Those are going to have a continental pilsner type of, you know, background, and you know, a lot of Munich malt or Vienna malt, and a very restrained hop character.
Mm-hmm.
When you get into the amber ales, at least here on the West Coast, you're going to have quite a bit of crystal malt. You're going to have some fruitiness from the ale yeast, or maybe not necessarily a whole lot of fruitiness, but a clean. You're not going to have a lager character, put it that way. You're not going to have the sulfur of that. And you're going to have a considerable amount of hop flavor as well, and hop aroma. All right, so when we come back, we will get into the recipe for this bad boy.
Nice.
The Lady Madonna for you?
Yeah.
Do you have feelings of inadequacy? Do you suffer from shyness? Do you sometimes wish you were more assertive? If you answered yes to any of these questions, ask your doctor or pharmacist about tequila.
Tequila.
Tequila is the safe, natural way to feel better and more confident about yourself and your actions. Tequila can help ease you out of your shyness and let you tell the world that you're ready and willing to do just about anything. You'll notice the benefits of tequila almost immediately, and with a regimen of regular doses, you can overcome any obstacles that prevent you from living the life you want to live. Shyness and awkwardness will be a thing of the past, and you'll discover many talents you never knew you had. Stop hiding and start living with tequila. Tequila may not be right for everyone. Women who are pregnant or nursing should not use tequila. However, women who wouldn't mind nursing or becoming pregnant are encouraged to try it. Side effects may include dizziness, nausea, vomiting, incarceration, erotic lustfulness, loss of motor control, loss of clothing, loss of money, loss of virginity, delusions of grandeur, table dancing, headache, dehydration, dry mouth, and a desire to sing karaoke and play all night rounds of strip poker, truth or dare, and naked twister. Warning, the consumption of alcohol may make you think you're whispering when you're not, is a major factor in dancing like a retard, may cause you to tell your friends over and over again that you're in love with them, also may cause you to think you can sing. Alcohol may lead you to believe that ex-lovers are really dying for you to telephone them at 4 a.m. Alcohol may make you think you can logically converse with members of the opposite sex without spitting. It may create the illusion that you are tougher, smarter, faster, and better looking than most people, and it may lead you to think people are laughing with you. Alcohol may cause pregnancy, and it also may be a major factor in getting your ass kicked. So what are you waiting for? Stop hiding and start living with tequila.
Tequila!
This is the Jameel Show.
All right, we're back.
We are back.
It's Sunday night, and we're talking about American Ambers or Red Ales.
Yes. I kind of enjoy this, actually.
Yeah, I do.
It's a lot more relaxed.
We can have a bunch of beer.
Yeah,
you can have beer.
We don't have to go to work after this.
Exactly.
It's
a little low-key, you know? It's more relaxed. I don't know.
Well, it's not cold and sterile here in the studio either.
Yeah, and Justin doesn't smell as bad either. Cold, so
John's not hopped up on coffee. Yeah. He's hopped up on beer.
Alcohol, yeah.
All right. So it's a whole different change-up here, right?
Yes, it is.
Good.
Okay, we promised a kind of a Red Rocket clone. It may be not an exact clone, but it gets you pretty darn close, and it is a
it could be better, right?
Yeah, well, there you go.
The brewer can just get better. Just because it's different doesn't mean it's worse. It's just better.
Better.
That's right. And I want to say that, if you're looking to do an American Amber or a red beer, and you're doing this, if you're entering competition on the East Coast or in the Midwest or somewhere like that, I mean, those are excellent beers as well. But if you're trying to enter one here on the West Coast, you're going to have one more like this beer I'm going to give you now.
Okay.
If you're entering one somewhere else, you might do fairly well. They may say, "Oh my God, this is way out of style because it's way too hoppy. It's way too big. It's it's not."
You got to brew for the arena that you're in.
Exactly. I think that's, there's some regional differences, and that's perfectly acceptable. But, what somebody might call something one place or another.
I just know that most people that like this beer love this beer.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty popular.
It's a good beer. All right. So for a 6-gallon batch, we're talking original gravity starting 1067. And here's
that's way up there.
Yeah. The style guide goes to like 1060.
What's wrong with this?
And
totally 7 points.
One of the things I want to say about this, I'm gonna start out with an extract version of this.
There
recipe.
You go.
Because as you'll notice, I printed this out from my my workings on the extract book that we're doing, recipe book that we're doing.
Ooh, this is like the first glimpse.
Yeah.
There you go.
So I didn't have to do any research.
What page was it?
I have no idea.
Oh,
I don't have page numbers on these.
Okay.
All right. So original gravity is 1067 or 16.3 Plato. Final gravity, you're shooting for about 1015 or 3.9 Plato. That's
respectable.
Apparent attenuation of 76%. 66 IBUs.
Wow.
Your color is going to be about 16 SRM or 31 EBC. Alcohol will be 6.8% or 5.3 alcohol by weight. And let's see here. English pale ale extract. Go with 8.75 pounds. And actually, I think that's a typo. I think it should be
like 9 something.
It should be just a light extract, like an Alexander's Pale or something like that. I'm not sure you really want to go with the English on this one. And then 8 3/4 pounds or just about 4 kilos. And Munich extract, about 0.7 pound or 320 grams. 75% of the pale extract and 6% of the Munich extract. Crystal 40, 1 pound, about 0.45 kilos. Crystal 120, a half a pound or 227 grams.
Wow.
And Victory Malt, the Breeze Victory Malt, gives a nice toasty, biscuity type of background to it. I really like. That's a half a pound, 227 grams. And Pale Chocolate Malt at 200 Lover Bond, that is 3 ounces or 85 grams.
That's a lot of steeping grains.
Colors it up a little.
Yeah, it's
a lot of stuff. It's a big, bold beer.
And
a lot of it comes from that crystal malt, the darker crystals, and gives it really a lot of character in it, and it holds up to a lot of hops. Now, for hops, we're going with Horizon pellet hops at 13% for 60 minutes, 1.1 ounces, 31 grams. That's going to give you about 54.2 IBUs using the Rager formula. Cascades, 6% at 10 minutes, going to use an ounce or 28 grams. Centennial, 9% Centennials at 10 minutes, an ounce, 28 grams. Cascades, again, at 0 minutes, 1 ounce or 28 grams. And Centennial at 0 minutes, 1 ounce or 28 grams. So you got 4 ounces of pellet hops and 6 gallons going in the last, 10 to 0 minutes.
But you got your bittering and you got your major aroma.
Major flavor and
major
aroma.
Yeah.
And okay. And you really need that for that beer.
Right.
You're going to end up around 66 IBUs. It's about a 1-to-1 ratio of IBUs to original Gravity Plus.
Wow. Okay.
Because it's a firmly bitter beer, but there's a lot of
caramely malty in that beer,
too. Yeah, pound and a half.
Yeah. And you got to get past that and counteract it with these hops.
Right. Hmm. You're going to use a California White Labs WLP-001 or the Y Yeast American Ale 1056, or you could use the Fermentis US-05, which is, they used to call it US-56, but I think they got in some trouble for that, so it's called US-05 now, the dry yeast.
That's funny.
It's a pretty good, I think in a beer like this, with it being so big and so flavorful, you're not going to notice some of the little...
Nuances with the
dry Fermentis 05. I think it's a fine choice for this. My preference is always for the liquid yeast companies, for the White Labs or the Y Yeast.
Well, you definitely want a clean, neutral yeast. I mean, you're throwing in all kinds of weird stuff in there. Crystal malts, weird hops, three different hop additions.
Yeah, don't go with a really funky wild yeast or anything like that.
Or English.
It just doesn't work right. Yeah. Well, and the problem with English is you're not going to get enough attenuation on this, especially
real early. You won't get 10 to 15 with that.
Yeah, right? You're going to end up under 70% with most of the English yeasts.
And that would be too sweet then for the style.
Exactly. Right. And it's like we were talking earlier, if you have too much residual sugar in there, combined with all those crystal malts, it ends up seeming syrupy and real caramelly, and it's way too much. You want it to be Green King Abbott Ale we're having earlier.
Mm-hmm.
That's got a fair amount of crystal to it, but it's really dry.
Yeah, it's totally dry,
and it doesn't taste like it's too much crystal. It's kind of an interesting, almost smoky, tobacco-y kind of flavor once you dry that stuff out.
Yeah, but it's balanced.
So too much residual sugar, you end up, it ends up cloying and syrupy and not quite right. And you can't really balance that out with hops. It's like the Imperial IPA again.
Right.
You can't counteract a huge finishing gravity with more hops. It just becomes way too cloying.
Mm-hmm.
You need to dry it out enough so that the hops come through and you can an intense hop flavor and aroma actually requires a lower finishing gravity, I think.
Well, you definitely want to be able to drink it too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's too sweet. You're not going to be able to drink one
matter how many hops you throw in, it just makes it worse.
Yeah.
Not better.
So the yeast is pretty important on how you throw that in, which yeast is. You're not going to get a good yeast complement with this. You want a nice clean yeast.
Neutral.
You want one that's not going to drop out too fast. It'll finish it down.
Exactly. And the American ale yeast, those will attenuate up to 80% or so.
How about adding sugar maybe to this recipe like they do in an Imperial IPA?
Well, and you can if you're
like
going
to dry it out just a tad.
If you're going to make it any bigger than this, you definitely want to be adding sugar.
Yeah.
This, you can do it without sugar. American ambers, reds, they finish a little sweet, and they have some body to them, and they're a pretty rich beer. If you add sugar at this point, I think you might end up a little too dry. You could. It depends on, especially if you're an extract brewer, maybe you would.
Yeah.
You might consider 5% just straight cane sugar, corn sugar, in this recipe. If you're an all grain brewer, you're going to replace that pale ale extract with 12.25 pounds of the pale ale malt. Replace the Munich extract with a pound of Munich malt, and you're going to mash about 152.
Mm. Wow. And it's pretty dry then.
Yeah, this is going to give you about a 75-76% attenuation.
Mm. Okay.
What I was kind of getting at is, what if you're an extract brewer and you always come up, your finishing gravity is always too high?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you're supposed to be finishing at 10-15. And you're always disappointed at 10-20. Every time you try to do a beer over 10-65, would it be helpful, maybe, like you said, just a little bit of corn sugar in it?
Like 4 ounces for 5 gallons?
Sure. Yeah, so you're doing just a little bit. You know your own track record.
Right.
You're always doing this extract beer, and the recipe always says you're at 10-76 or 10-67, and it's supposed to dry out to 10-14, 10-15. Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah,
you never
it's
get
a common
down,
problem.
You never get down that far.
Absolutely,
and it's not necessarily you. It could be the extract.
Well, the problem that homebrewers have is they're not pitching enough yeast, so they're not getting down enough. and they're also leaving all their fermentables up to someone else that's producing it for
them. Yeah, and you don't know. It's so unknown.
Yeah.
So if you know your own track record, mm-hmm. and you brewed this once and it didn't get down to where Jamil says,
right.
Some things that might help you is just to dry it out a little
bit. I would start out with about 5% corn sugar. And, you know, you're not going to notice any, you know, flavor contribution. People worry about cider. You use plain old table sugar. If you don't have corn sugar, plain old table sugar is fine. It's plain old sucrose.
Look at the C and H out there. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah, no problem at all. 5%, you know, don't think of it as, oh, it's going to, you know, make a cidery beer, or I'm making, mm-hmm. you know, bad beer. You know, there's nothing wrong with table sugar. It's like, and one of the examples I use in the book is, you know, it'd be like a, you know, an artist, a painter, saying, well, you know, I don't want to use white because, you know, white. A lot of white would be, you know, would make my picture
look
bland.
It would wash it out.
Right. Yeah. It's like, well, you know, so you're going to stop using white altogether? You know, that's not something you want to do. So, you know, start out with 5%, see, you know, how it dries it out. If not, you know, go to 10%. If that's mm-hmm. still not enough, 15%. I think you go to 20%, no problem. And,
wow.
And especially in a beer this big.
Well, but the other, your recipe that you give them?
Yeah, yeah. You know, in a lower gravity, lower flavor beer, you might want to restrict yourself to 10%.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But in any of the bigger beers where you're likely to have an attenuation problem, you know, you go to, you can go to 20%.
And this is not a small beer, so in any way.
Right. And the only thing you'll notice is that it's going to finish a little drier, and that's what you're going to want. You know, you want to get down to that point that, you know, it finishes at.
Well, drier the better for sure. I mean, well, drink more.
Yeah, as long as it's within the realm of what you want to end up with.
Right.
And so many times I've come up with it, you know, oh, dang, I can't get down that last 4 or 5 points. Mm. And it's just one more tool to get it down there.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're going to end up with, like what you said, you're going to end up with a cloyingly sweet beer, and you can't handle that with just more hops.
Right. Anytime you get over, you know, probably in the mid-60s to 70s, you might, you know, depending on what you're brewing, if it needs a drier finish, you probably want to start looking, especially as an extract brewer, you want to start looking at simple sugars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's the only way you're going to get down there. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with extracts. It's just that you need to produce some simple sugars, which, you know, the extract's not going to have enough. And, you know, in defense of the extract producers, they really need to produce an extract that's going to make a good beer with the average beer that you might brew.
And
you
keep it consistent.
The 12 Plato 1048 beer, you know, it's going to have the right degree of fermentability to turn out a great beer at that point. And with extract, you can make awesome beers.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to know what you're doing. And if you're making a lower gravity beer and you want it to finish, you know, higher, you're going to need to add maybe some carapils, you know, something that's going to add some long-chain dextrins to your wort. If you're going to make a barley wine or something like that, or Imperial IPA, you got to add some sugar. If you don't add sugar,
you know,
it's going to be syrupy sweet.
Yeah.
It's going to, you know, you can have all this sugar left over.
And we know Jamil hates that.
Sugary sweet,
Yeah.
Okay. A little break here? We're having fun now, aren't we?
All right. We're going to take a
waiter.
Little break. And we'll try and answer a few questions and wrap up our discussion of American Amber Ales.
Early this morning, you knocked upon my door.
Now, back to the Jamil Show.
I feel good. I knew that I would not. So good. So good. I got you. Oh, I feel nice.
All right, we're back. We're talking about American Amber Ales. I got my drunken host here, John Plisse.
And we're feeling good.
And special guest host Dr. Scott in,
good to be
in
here.
The studio with us.
Dr. Scott.
Yeah, this is actually if you're preparing to call in on Monday and join the chat room and all that?
We'll
don't, because we're not here.
We're asleep and hungover.
Yes, exactly. This is we're doing this live Sunday night just after the Sunday show. We're actually enjoying this because it gives us a chance to have a couple of beers while we do the show.
Feels better. Change is a good thing.
Definitely feels better.
Yeah.
A beer feels better.
Yeah. I have a question for you, though.
Yes.
Let's talk about the use of crystal malts in an amber ale.
Okay.
How do you decide a 40, a 60, a 75, a 120.
Oh, good question.
How do you decide the percentage? What are the flavor differences between them? Blending them? I mean, explain more.
That's an excellent question. And one of the things that happens, I think, you know, when I'm looking at a recipe or trying to craft something in particular, I look at the, you know, there's, if you go and get yourself, go down to your local homebrew shop, get yourself, you know, a few grains of, you know, crystal 10 or 15, a few grains of crystal 40 in that range, a few grains of 60, 80, 120 in there, if they have it, 150 or 200, the German roast malt. Mm. You know, taste each one of them, Simon, so you're going to notice it, you know, a considerable difference in something like a 120 versus a 40,
mm-hmm.
You know, a 15 versus an 80 or a 60. Not so much between a 40 and a 60, but there is a difference there.
Sure.
And generally, the darker the malt you go, you get more raisiny, mm-hmm. you get more burnt raisin. You get some grape nuts. You actually get some toasty in there. When you get down in the real low color crystals and the 10 love and things like that, you kind of get like a background sweetness, and it doesn't taste very caramelly or sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of use that more for a body feel rather than that roasty, raisiny thing that you're building up to. Right. You kind of build in after that.
I think the one that's most like a caramel is maybe Crystal 40.
Right.
Everybody agree with that?
Uh-huh.
Sure.
Definitely.
IPA or amber, pale, whatever.
And so, of all the specialty malts I think I use Crystal 40 more than anything. At least I think I go through more Crystal 40 than anything. I've noticed that.
It's a good middle road kind of thing.
Yeah, it's used in a lot of beers. It's something, you know, a lot of people will tend to rely on. And the interesting thing is, if you're trying to clone something, a commercial beer that you like, a lot of times, and if it's not an unusual beer, it tends to be Crystal 40. And if it's an unusual beer, it tends not to be Crystal 40.
Right.
But it's a good base caramel flavor. The darker the crystals, the more red color they provide.
And do you use less as the higher it goes up, or do you use more? Or, I mean, how do you decide on how much you use?
Depends on what you're doing. For example, in this, you could go all crystal 120.
Just like a pound of 120. You're set.
You could go with that and omit the 40. Hmm. And you'll get slightly bitter, kind of intense raisin, dark raisin type of flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll drop some of the sweetness. The 120 is not as sweet as the 40, also in taste.
Okay,
you know,
sweetness kind of rolls over into roastiness.
Yeah,
kind of that whole kind of rainbow.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. If you're trying to make a more traditional amber red for anything other than the West Coast, you know, what I would do is I'd back off on some of these crystal malts. I'd cut back maybe in half on these crystal malts because, you know, this is a pretty intense beer. I would cut that
over
down.
Top.
I'd get rid of the pale chocolate, which adds a toasty, slightly nutty, roasty type of thing to it, and get rid of that as well. I'd drop it down to maybe around the 1050 range, mid 1050, 1052 or so.
Hmm.
And so you keep about the same attenuation as well.
So would you decrease it by half if you want to go for a 1050 or 25% less? I mean,
this is
an over-top red ale, amber red. I mean, this is like the highest you could be for
style,
right?
I'd cut it maybe down to half. You need, and again, for those who are looking for competition or something like that, you need your amber ales to be... Now, the style guide may say you can range down towards, you know, the high end of the pale ale range, but if you're in competition, no way. You need to have this thing be a red amber beer,
right.
And it needs to have some crystal malt flavor,
right.
And it needs to have a bit of hops, and you know, without those things, you're going to lose that to somebody else.
Now, what about not using crystal malts and using like Cara Munich or Caravine or Special B for coloring? Now, would that be out of style, or would that be, I mean, can you use that for a certain percentage? I mean, just to kind of be unique?
Yeah, you can, and I think that would be all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, is that, as long as it's red, is that the style, or is it?
Yeah, you know, it's a slightly different flavor.
Mm-hmm.
A little more kind of like a toasted bread type of.
They're made a little differently.
Okay.
So you got to kind of go in with, you know, what your the characteristic is going to be. It's going to be more along the Oktoberfest or Vienne style, but you're going to get a little of that because you're using a lot less.
So those would be more to style for an amber lager then?
Yeah, but like you said, being unique.
Okay.
You want to stand out, but you want to still be within style.
Right.
So you want to be a little, not a bad idea to go that route.
It's personal choice. I mean, it's all by flavor. Right. So.
I wouldn't cut out, you know, all the crystal to do that, to do the Caribbean or the Cara Munich by any means. But
well, and again, if you want to do a an American amber ale, again, American amber ale, use, you know, crystal. Domestic, you know, caramel crystal type of malts. Use, you know, when you shift away from the malts of a region or the products of a region, the beers tend to not match what you're trying to. You know, here in the U.S., we tend to use a lot of different ingredients, so it's a little more okay. But if you're trying to make, you know, an Oktoberfest or something like that, or German beer, use German ingredients. If you're trying to make an English beer, use the English ingredients. If you're trying to make a Belgian beer, tend to use, well, continental ingredients. And if you're trying to make a, you know, a U.S. pub type of beer, you know, use domestic two-row, use American type ingredients. All right, so one thing, if you have questions for the show, you really want to, you know, we answer those questions at the end of the show. So get in the chat room and, you know, type those in. Justin will, you know, filter them out, try and keep us on topic here. And we tend to cover those at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Right.
Good.
Hold on here. Let me step here, up here.
This is fun.
I like the format. I like that you guys are staying on topic, but you're also very lively. So I just want to put in my two cents.
Thanks.
I'm happy about
this
tonight's
fun
show.
Yeah.
Beer tends to make us lively.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I can throw a couple questions at you real quick. I know we do most at the end, but a little transition point here. I assume you're about to start talking about fermentation of this kind of beer coming up soon, because someone has brewed this beer kind of often and was given like a 1 week fermentation time, and he wants to know kind of about the whole fermentation process, which I know you can talk about, but I guess what he meant was time to ferment in primary, and then do you have to secondary it, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. I am, you know, the anti-secondary guy.
Yeah, you are.
I like to, you know, pitch, you know, the proper amount of yeast, clean, healthy yeast. I like to do it fairly cool, and I like to let that thing go, and then
you like to let it go
until it's completely done. Everything.
You let fermentation complete, and then you let fermentation reabsorb its byproducts.
Right.
Right. You let it clean itself out.
Well, yes. he likes to
like
go
a good enema.
Like a good enema.
I
was going to say the same thing.
Jamil likes to go 1.5 to 2 times what a normal fermentation would stop. I see homebrewers say, when am I done? When fermentation stops, and they want to go right there, and they want to pull it right out of the fermenter right then. Jamil will go at least 1.5 to 2. That's what I do now.
Right.
Listening to him, that's why I got a porter, and I've got a Munich Helles that's been in there a lot longer than I want it to be in there. But you know what? It's going to be okay.
It's okay.
Right. Well, and one of the things I was taught when I first started brewing was, okay, so it takes 1 week to ferment the beer. And then at the end of, you know, 7 days, you transfer this to another container, and then the beer is going to clear itself because it's in this other container. I still don't understand the reasoning behind that. And then after a week in that, it is ready to bottle. And, you know, that is, you know, how fermentation works. Well, it doesn't. And it depends on the yeast. It depends on the original gravity of the beer. It depends on the hops, the temperature, you know, so many different things. And really, you know, you got to get a little more zen-like with it. And what I like to do, again, you know, pitch a, you know, good, clean, healthy, proper amount of yeast. At, you know, for this beer, I like 67 degrees Fahrenheit. You're going to need about 13 grams of properly rehydrated dry yeast, or you're going to use about 2.5 liquid yeast packs, or you're going to make about a 3.5 liter starter using 1 pack liquid yeast pack. ferment. You know, you can pitch this, you know, about 67 or maybe a little bit lower. Let that get up to 67 and ferment at 67. Now, as it goes, you're going to kind of watch this thing and see, you know, you want to maintain it at 67 degrees. You know, you're not going to let it, you know, lag down to 65 as fermentation starts to taper off. You want to keep that thing, you know, at that temperature. And eventually, it's going to stop fermenting. And at
eventually.
That point, right, you're going to look at it, you're going to lift up whatever you're covering it with, a towel or a t-shirt or whatever, and take a look and say, oh, okay, well, it stopped fermenting. No bubbles in the airlock, but it
no
still
foam.
Looks all yeasty, right?
Right.
So you're going to let that yeast fall to the bottom and wait for the beer to become nice and clear.
Invest in a flashlight.
Right. It's going to take like an extra, you know, several days. Yeah. You know, usually it's done fermenting in, you know, a beer this big, it's 1067. It's done in, you know, under a week. You know, if you pitch the right amount of yeast, 4 or 5 days, it's done.
Wow.
And then you're going to let it sit for another, you know, 4 or 5 days.
Okay.
You know, you're going to go to at least 10 days or so.
Right.
And all that yeast is going to drop to the bottom, sediment nice. The beer is going to be nice and bright and clear and red.
Yeah.
And that's the point that you can go ahead and transfer it.
Yeah.
When
looks
keep
clear
it
and red,
temperature.
You're
right.
ready to go.
Yeah.
Well, I like the Zen comment.
Hug your carboy.
Well, no, it's that's how I feel. I go in the brew house and no, not yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. And just, no, not yet.
You look at it, you feel
yeah.
the fermenter.
You get the aura
get
around the conical.
You feel your carboy.
Oh.
You feel your conical.
Yeah, the airlock isn't going anymore, but you know, there's something going on in there.
Right, you get a sense.
Yeah, you know, I might rack tomorrow, and I might not when I go in there. I don't know. But I should, at least by tomorrow, I should start racking tomorrow. But if you don't feel right,
don't rush a good thing, you know.
It's not going anywhere.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, you can keep these beers at fermentation temperature for a considerable amount of time. Now, you don't want to do it, you know, overly long. You know, you're not going to get a month or more.
You're not
going to
get any more out of it.
Well, like four weeks.
No.
That's too long,
yeah,
right?
At a certain point, you're going to start to, you know, the yeast are going to lice, and you're going, you know, the yeast are going to end up, you know, coughing up all their guts and
bad things.
Yeah. And you're going to end up, and you'll get a very, you know, some cells may be doing this, but really, if you start with good, clean, healthy yeast, if you're starting with junky yeast, you're going to get
junky
more,
beer.
You're going to get problems.
Right.
Yeah. But if you start with good, clean, healthy yeast, and you ferment it at, you know, a good temperature, and you know, the yeast are going to be okay. They're going to last an extra week sitting in the beer.
Mm.
They're not going to cough up and die. People that think it happens overnight, no. If you're starting with good yeast, you really don't have a problem. And then, you know, you can let it sit that extra week. They will break down the diacetyl. They will, you know, absorb the acetaldehyde, and the, you know, all these byproducts. These are all steps in the you know, process to getting ethanol, and you know, they will reabsorb those and finish converting them, and you get with nice, clean, good, well fermented beer, proper attenuation, all those things,
which is very important. Now,
yeah.
Do you have an all grain recipe for this, or
I do,
yeah,
but I covered it as extract and said, hey, if you're doing all grain, you're gonna you know, kick in about 12 1/4 pounds of your pale ale malt and a pound of Munich instead of the two extracts.
So it'll be posted.
Okay, good.
But I think my next brew might be that one, and I got to brew pretty soon. So
yeah.
I may be hitting
turns out
up.
Really good.
I've never brewed an amber ale ever.
Cool.
So
wow.
I might brew one.
You know, I'm brewing Tuesday. I was going to do a pale.
Yeah.
I might do your amber in lieu of this show, actually.
Let's all take Tuesday off and brew.
We'll all brew the same recipe.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Gotta think about doing it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I'm inspired now because I want something on tap, something like that, something to offset some of the other things I have, something in the middle.
Right,
so,
right.
It's a good.
Amber ale is one of my favorite styles. You know, it may not be, you know, popular amongst the beer cognoscenti. You know, it's like for me, you know, it's a great drinking beer.
Well, it's popular in brew pubs, but not necessarily in the bottle.
Right, right.
So it doesn't fly off the shelves, but, you know, most
people. You can get some really great ones out here, like Bevo. The Ballast Point has a good one. Calico Amber or something like that. Down in San Diego, you know, and they sell it at BevMo, and it's really good. And the Red Rocket's really good. And, you know, I'm leaving out a whole bunch of them, but there's a lot of them. Bunch of really good amber ale.
Anderson Valley Bundt Amber.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Or Alaskan Amber's pretty good, too.
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
But that's a totally different beer. That's not nearly as hoppy or as red.
Not.
That's
it's
more
not.
Along the lines of like a Northern German Alt, I think.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely along like an Alt. But
an Alt bit.
Don't be afraid of it. You know, you see amber on there.
Right, yeah, I'm a big fan of the amber style, and it may not be, you know, it may be the people considering it like the McDonald's of beer styles or something, but
no.
It's truly American, and it has such a wide dynamic range.
There's no such thing as McDonald's of beer styles.
Bud Miller
doesn't. Well, that's true, but
yeah,
that's not beer, though. But.
No, that's beer.
Close.
It's just a different style of
different
beer.
Different style of beer.
That's true.
Eventually, we will cover those
we
styles.
We still recognize it.
Yeah.
We will cover every style on this show.
Quick question before you guys move too far past it. Someone was curious, you know, in the grains, what adds the most of the red color? You know, which grain is the most of that?
The darker
yeah,
crystals.
You know, the darker crystals in this case. And actually, if you want to get some red color, the black malts, like the roast barley and... will add a considerable red color. You need to use restraint, and just a tiny bit, and it'll give you quite a red color to it.
Do you have to do that trick where you don't mix it into the mash, you just put it on the top of the mash to get good color and not that astringent flavor off of the black malts? Well,
I know people do that, or they'll cold steep or do things like that.
Yeah.
I think if you do those methods, the thing is you're going to have to use more.
Okay.
And in order to get the same color or flavor?
Oh, I do it.
So.
I've done that before where I want to just, I don't want to get, I use chocolate generally, and I don't want to get that roasty, mm-hmm. excellent roasty flavor. So I'll put it in the mash really late, mm-hmm. But I grind it up in a coffee grinder. So I get it as milled as I can. Mm-hmm. And I sprinkle it on top of the mash as I... filter through.
Well, see what I do if I'm looking for the color contribution and you know, not the astringency of those dark roasted malts. I use the Carafa Special, and they have that in, you know, three different color ranges. They have
the 1, 2, 1, 3.
Yeah, it's about it's like 350 Love, 430, and 530 or something. Yeah, and those you can powder them up. I'll run them through a coffee grinder and make a powder out of mm-hmm. them, and I'll sprinkle that powder. But I'll sprinkle it on in the very beginning and. Since there's no husk, there's very little of that astringency to it. And so that's a good color adjustment. Or you can get Cinnamar extract from some homebrew shops. They started selling it in small containers.
You used to buy like a gallon and a half or something.
It used to be 5 liters was the minimum size, but now they're selling homebrew size. And it's like $2-3 for a pretty good sized dose.
So when you say you have to use very little of those grains to get that color of the dark mm-hmm. roasted grains... Are we even talking a percentage point, or is it even less than like 1%?
5 gallon batch, we're talking 5%. Like ounces. So
yeah, just, you know, it'll be like, you know, 1 ounce.
Yeah, 1 or 2 ounces.
Okay,
2 ounces.
Like
yeah.
That. In this Red Rocket type beer, we're using 3 ounces of pale chocolate, not as much for color, but because it adds some of that. There's a kind of a dark, intense.
Yeah, and this beer you know. Definitely has that character to it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's the purpose of that, to kind of give it that background and a slight dryness that
it's there. At the high end, kind of that rounded kind of...
Do you
almost roasty, but not.
Right.
Do you guys think that recirculation during your mash is important for extracting color if you do late grain addition of graphite?
I always recirc anyway.
But let's say if you don't, if you just sparge on top of it, would you still get the same color if you didn't?
I don't think so. I think the recirculation aids in color extraction.
Okay.
So I always recirc, so it goes on top when I start to recirc, so I'm going to get that. And what he said, he puts it in the middle of the mash for the beginning of the mash because...
Yeah, I just mix it in with all my other grains.
There you go. I just like, I put it in at the end and then I recirc and... comes out great.
Although Mike McDowell has a good tip on this. If you want to adjust colors, and a lot of times, you know, the darker color malts, they'll allow them to range and level bond by like, you know, 10% or so.
Mm-hmm.
You may have, you know, 500 love, 550 love, and that's an actual fairly significant difference. And what he'll do is he'll add half his highly roasted malts to a beer. He'll look at the wort and see that he's recirculating and see what the color is. And if it doesn't look quite right or looks too dark or the flavor's not quite right, he will, he'll add a little bit more until he gets it where he wants it.
Right.
So he doesn't worry about adding it all at the very beginning. He'll add a portion, try it, see, and then, so he doesn't go overboard.
Mike makes an argument that malts vary from where you buy it from the homebrew shop.
Oh, yeah.
So he's brewing based on what he's buying from the retailer.
Well, you can get, chocolate malt. People carry chocolate malt that's, 300 love.
Right.
And people carry chocolate malt that's 500 love.
Right.
That's a huge difference. Same thing on the roasted barley, on the black malts.
Right.
They range from, 400 love up to 600 love.
Right.
And that is a substantial difference. And what Mike's saying is like, well, unless you have like a 50-pound sack, a 55-pound sack, and you're using that same sack of grains, you really got to be careful because it's going to change over time.
So don't just look at the alpha acids on the hops. Look at the Lovibond on your grains too. Plug them in. I use the brewing software, and it'll bring that into consideration.
All right, so let's wrap up here.
Use a Zen here
Hold on.
Zen.
Oh, there
for
go.
An American amber ale, West Coast style, we're going to shoot for an original gravity about 1067, a big beer. This is sort of a fairly big beer.
West Coast
style. Coast style. Intense. You're going to try and get that to finish out around 1015, so it's not too cloying. You're going to shoot for 66 IBUs. It's going to be about 16 SRM color. It's about a 6.8% beer. You're going to use the light extract. You're going to use 8 3/4 pound or about 4 kilos. You're going to use about 0.7 pound or 320 grams of Munich malt extract. And you can replace those with 12 1/4 pounds of pale malt or 1 pound of Munich malt. Mash at 152 if you're doing all grain. And then your other grains, Crystal 40, a pound or 0.45 kilos. Crystal 120, a half pound or 227 grams. Victory malt from Brees, which I think is actually critical for this, a half pound or 227 grams. And then pale chocolate malt at 200 love, you're going to go with 3 ounces or 85 grams. Your hops, Horizon at 60 minutes, 1.1 ounce or 31 grams. And then an ounce or 28 grams of the following: Cascade at 10 minutes, Centennial at 10 minutes, Cascade at 0 minutes, and Centennial at 0 minutes. So 4 ounces, 2 ounces at 10 minutes, and 2 ounces at 0 minutes. Ferment this with a clean ale yeast like the White Labs WLP-001 or the Y Yeast 1056. Or in this case, since it's a pretty big, bold, intense beer, you can go with the Fermentis Safale US-05 dry yeast, and you'd be just fine. 13 grams of properly rehydrated dry yeast, or 2.5 liquid yeast packs, or a 3.5-liter starter using 1 pack of yeast. Ferment at about 67 degrees. Hold that baby steady.
Hold it steady.
Give it time. Do the Zen thing.
Bring it home.
Become one with the fermenter.
Hug it.
And watch that thing finish. Wait until it drops perfectly clear. And you have a really nice...
Serve it to your friends.
West Coast American Amble.
Drink straight from the carboy, you're good.
Yeah. It will be really, really good.
You'll win a lot of friends with that one.
Last question that came through, this is kind of a cheater question, because he says he brewed this 2 weeks ago and forgot to put in the 0-minute hop addition, so I guess his little flavor.
Dry hop.
Yep.
So he says he is now dry hopping with it. He wants to know how long he should leave the hops in.
10 to 14 days.
Well, it depends how much dry hops you put in. If you put in 2 ounces of dry hops, probably within a week it'll be there.
Taste it and figure out. But John's pretty good with that one. Depends on how much you put in there.
Those are pretty intense hops. And it just depends on how much flavor you want. And it's going to be a different flavor than a 0-minute addition. Trust me, it's not the same. It's actually quite a bit different.
You get a grassy flavor, right, from dry hopping?
You can, yeah.
Okay.
These are pretty intense hops right here, so... not as much grass. You can extract out a lot of the flavors without getting too much grassiness from these hops.
Okay.
They get a lot of high oil content.
Amber ale this.
All right. Yeah. So the next show coming up is going to be Belgian Dark Strongs, and we're going to do that in just a few minutes. And
I brought a sample.
So stand by, and John's got a sample. Anyways, thanks for joining the show, Doc and John.
No problem.
And Bruce Strong.
If you're a podcast listener, just hang in there, because you're going to get both of these shows on schedule according to the Jameel Show schedule. Just look at the Jameel page, and you'll get exactly what you need. If you're a live listener, you're getting a bonus broadcast tonight, the Jameel Show, live after the Sunday show. And coming up right now is another episode, so just hang on for a couple of minutes. The Jameel Show has been a production of the Brewing Network. Please send questions for Jameel to jameel@thebrewingnetwork.com. The Jameel Show airs live every other Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Brewing Network.